Quick, Greg, let's meet each other.
Sidney Crosby, that's the problem with it.
Knock it off right now.
No,
here's what you don't understand.
No, you don't understand it at all.
You can't compare it to that. Knock it off right now.
Sorry, we wanted to hit the ground running.
That was good. That was my impression of Twitter the last 12 hours.
That was your impression of sports talk radio.
Yeah.
Impression of
Twitter.
All right.
Twitter.
Here's where we stand. Sidney Crosby has a concussion. Sidney Crosby will not play in game 4. Matt Niskanen will not be punished from the National Hockey League for the cross check to the head of Crosby that knocked him out of game 3. And, oh, that's right. Also, the Washington Capitals locker room has been accused by at least 3 writers of having a JFK-style assassination conspiracy to take out Crosby in game 3.
All right, we'll get to the injury and the hit and all the specifics and break it down Zapruder style. Elliot Friedman joins us at 2:30 Eastern if you're listening to the live stream. Elliot joins us here in about 28 minutes if you're listening on iTunes. All of a sudden, the series has got something. All of a sudden, the series is not just, well, is Crosby going to trump Ovechkin again? All of a sudden, there's a little bit of the Clockwork Orange involved in the series. All of a sudden, the stakes are higher. What have we been talking about for the longest time? Now, I know getting there is an awful thing.
I know.
Getting there is terrible. Crosby not playing game 4.
That game 3 of this series is worth 1,000 pretty skating goals.
Say whatever you want about it. People are watching game 4.
Yeah.
Everyone's forced into an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's forced into an opinion that's based even more so on heart than head, than on emotion and logic, than on et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So regardless of how it got there, all of a sudden now stakes are higher and there's an emotional charge to this. How many times have we said, man, a lot of lifeless games out there?
Yeah.
And I says, wow, that's an emotionless game. No emotion in that one. Just going through the routines. Each team married to their system, going to stick with it. If it works, it works. If not, oh, well, another game in 2 nights.
Mm-hmm.
Not now.
If I may be, just to give you a little sidebar, it's not every writer that agrees with this opinion. In fact, one prominent writer for a prominent hockey publication said last night, "This is the worst I've seen in the year's playoffs, and it's not even close." And then said writer wrote a junior league version of the Rob Rossi speculative piece about whether or not the Capitals locker room ordered the code red on Sidney Crosby. It was extraordinarily compelling. Everybody cares about the series now. There's anger and passion and hatred. And like you said, it sucks that we're here. It sucks that one of the best 365 days for any player, maybe in the last 30 years in hockey, might have been ruined by another concussion.
Yep.
Here's my question to you, because I know that you and I can speak freely on the show. It's not something that I necessarily want to always put out there. I'm not going to write a post about it necessarily, at least not now. Let's say the Capitals come back and win this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that if you're a Caps fan?
Fine.
I think ultimately fine.
You don't?
But hold on. Don't you think that this kind of, and I know no Caps fan's going to agree with this, that if they come back and win this series, sans Crosby kind of cheapens
series?
It.
No.
That couldn't beat him with Crosby?
No.
Mm.
No, because it all depends on how you look at the event. And I look at the event as a, here comes the Penguin, the hate tweets from Penguins fans. I look at it as a split-second play that had horrible consequences for Sidney Crosby.
I just think I
begin in watching hockey by saying one thing to myself and reminding myself of this all the time. We don't like to talk about it. People don't want to admit it, but they all know that it's true. This is a collision sport.
Mm-hmm.
This is a contact sport.
Mm-hmm.
This is a concussion sport.
Mm-hmm.
When you have bodies at that speed with those weights changing direction and shifting heights, and each man is armed with a stick and shoulder and elbow pads, heads will be hit. You need to assume that that is going to happen in every single game. Start there.
Here's here's how I saw the play. Ovechkin gives him a incredible whack with his stick on a scoring play. Because Sid is on the doorstep. This is a high-danger scoring chance. I did not think that Ovechkin saw Crosby and harkened back to that meeting after Game 2 in which Nicholas Backstrom told all the players in the room to murder Sid Crosby. I didn't think that happened. I think he just took his stick and hit Crosby as hard as he could to prevent a scoring play. And then Crosby loses his balance because of that and kind of trips on Ovechkin's skate as well. And then falls to his right where Matt Niskanen is there. And now here's where things get a little dicey. Does Niskanen raise his stick in order to inflict damage on Crosby in a prone position? Or does he raise his stick along with his gloves to brace for impact, in which case it's sort of incidental contact and may not rise to the level of being a major penalty in a game misconduct? And certainly didn't rise to the level of a suspension, as he's not getting suspended. How did you see it?
Same way. And to the Matt Niskanen, well, first of all, there's the Ovi tap on the back of the head as well. Like, Ovechkin does what every single player does in that situation. Not unlike what, you know, Crosby did to Mark Methot, which Pittsburgh Penguins fans went out the door and around the block to try to philosophically justify.
You mean
I was one of them. Saying that that's okay, that happens every game.
Cut his finger off like he was cheating at cards in Reno.
To say nothing of how they philosophically justified the cowbell on Ryan O'Reilly. Okay, so Ovechkin does what every single player would do in that situation. It's a hard cut to the net by Sidney Crosby. He goes in the Mohawk formation, the skates out to the side, the old Ulf Dahlin style, to go around the net. So he's not seeing Matt Niskanen. He's putting himself in a situation where he's not really seeing what's to the right of him. He's committed to scoring that goal. He's committed to that play. As he goes down, he changes his level. And I have a hard time believing. And this is where I think, normally I'm not one of those you had to play the game to understand it, but in a situation like this, I think you have to at least have had some experience with hockey to know how quickly you can process information and make a decision out there.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that in that split second. Not a screen cap, okay? This isn't a screen cap endless moments where you can pause and make a decision on what you're going to do. In that split second, I don't think there's enough time for Matt Niskanen to say, freebie, here we go. This is for ragdolling me in Dallas so many years ago. No chance.
Jeffy says, keep your screen grabs, get rid of your GIFs and GIFs. This is real life, people.
Just show in real time.
Hey, informed speculation on the NHL looking at this. And it is informed speculation. He didn't spread his hands on the stick like you would
if Kipper's point last night, which was a good one, I think.
If you were looking to cross check somebody.
Yep.
And if you watch his arms, the best you could say is that he has his arms extended in front of him in a brace for impact kind of way, not thrusting the stick at Crosby's head. Yeah. And again, the penalty itself is the severity. It's the severity of the impact that determines whether or not it's a major. And I always read that to mean the severity of the impact of the guy thrusting his stick into somebody's head, not the severity of the impact of somebody falling into a stick. And that's why last night I found it to be a little specious that everybody was very much, yeah, that's a great call, because I can't say definitively that it was.
One of the questions I always come back to, and I think everyone, once Pittsburgh Penguins fans calm down about this one, that may take a while, I think you really need to ask yourself one very profound question about situations like this, and that is, do we need to ascribe malice to every injury? Or is hockey a sport where injuries are just going to occur because hockey?
So you agree that with what Barry Trotz said last night, that it was a hockey play?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hockey plays become
hockey plays become pejorative.
Yeah, it has.
Right? It completely has become a pejorative, but yes, it was. It was a hockey play that had a bad outcome, which will happen every now and then when you're playing a contact game at these high speeds. I can't see malice everywhere. Just because I see an injury, I'm not quick to, like, oh, well, what's the NHL going to do to protect star players? Well, we're mitigating against accidents now? about situations where a player gets clipped on his heel, changes his height, and ends up, instead of getting hit in the shoulders, gets hit in the head because it's a split second? What do you do? What is Crosby supposed to be, no touch? What are they doing to protect the stars? Does he get a no-touch jersey on now? Mm-hmm. Do all the stars get, you know, a little stripe on their jersey and you're not allowed to hit them? I don't know. Like, people say, oh, the NHL needs to do more to protect the stars. What does that mean? Not allowed to get hit. Especially not if they're going to the net.
This is from Ken Campbell. I've said it before and I will say it again. The game will never drag itself out of the dark ages until fewer, not more, former players start holding the levers of power. Hockey has more former players in positions of power than any other professional sport, and as long as that's the case, players of Crosby's ilk are simply going to have to put up with the abuse and be labeled as entitled whiners who want special treatment. 25 years ago this coming Friday, Adam Graves slashed Mario Lemieux and broke Lemieux's wrist in a playoff game. Lemieux later claimed that this slash was premeditated and that, quote, there was a contract out on me in that game. I'm not saying Roger Nielsen told Graves to go after me, but he told his players to go after me.
Has that happened before? Sure it has.
And now we get to the mania that's now been created around this Crosby story, which is that history has repeated itself. The Capitals decided en masse to be more physical with the Penguins. And in Rob Rossi's case, a guy who clearly remembers the Mario Graves incident, put a hit out on Crosby.
There's a difference between playing someone hard and putting a hit out on them. Like, this is, you know what? The reaction is expected. Like, I'm not surprised by any of it. Reading it last night was kind of boring. Like, wasn't it to you?
Because there was nothing. There was nothing boring. There was nothing boring about that Rossi piece.
Oh, the Rossi piece was anything but boring. The Rossi piece was one of the great promos of this generation.
And then, he wrote a piece for Upgroove, and then he cut a promo on Barry Trotz after basically badgering Trotz in the press conference about the incident. Then he cut a promo inside the arena, basically like calling Trotz stupid and saying that he's a loser
and bad coach. Yeah, that was interesting.
No, I think, you know, if Rossi and the rest of these guys would just stop at the idea of they decided in that room to be more physical with the Penguins, that's fine. But, like, this incident with Niskanen and Ovechkin, where it took place, how it took place, the speed with which it took place, is not putting a contract on somebody. Bertuzzi Moore is putting a contract on somebody.
Bertuzzi chased Moore down the ice.
Yeah, this
is a cut
so
to the net.
Unbelievably dumb that we're even entertaining this idea that guys with credentials, that guys that are in the Professional Hockey Writers Association, are entertaining the idea that there is a correlation between we need to play these guys more physical and Sidney Crosby getting injured. Because it's just, there's no line to be drawn. That play happens in every game, whether there's a players only meeting or not.
So what should have happened then in that situation? Put yourself in, like, let's say Ken Campbell's shoes for a second. And what should have happened in that scenario?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean,
injuries happen.
First of all, I'm not going to use the word outraged. I'm more surprised that the Ovechkin slash, both the initial slash and the chop to the head,
yeah,
hasn't gotten more play.
Yeah, I agree.
He seems to have skated on that one.
That's the actual penalty. It didn't cause the injury, but it's the penalty.
And it's right in front of the net where everyone's eyes are.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. That was a horrendously officiated game last night. I mean, the Shattenkirk hook on Matt Cullen, when Cullen has a clear path to the Capitals net, And Shattenkirk hooks him to the point where it looks like Cullen is cinching a belt around his jersey. For that not to be called is insane.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It was a horribly officiated game. It's a sad situation.
But here's where that gets dangerous. Okay. Here's where all of this becomes dangerous. If there's a different standard from game to game, You now have two emotionally charged teams, one that's lost their best player, and nobody knows what the rules are. That's where it gets dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'll see that point and say, yeah, that's recipe for chaos.
Do you think that in a game four, which is arguably the series, do you think that the Penguins traffic in retribution in
nope.
that game?
No chance. No way. Stakes are too high. Now, if it's 6-1 after 40.
Why wouldn't they put the hit out on Fleury? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Take
Tristan Jarry back there?
Take the goalie out? Always.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they tried and failed. They were crashing the net a little bit too last night.
You're allowed to go to the net hard last time I checked.
What a game, though, right? I mean,
no,
had,
on
top of the
fun. Great, look, great
Crosby
comeback. Malkin was fantastic at the end.
Yeah, the
Fleury
the,
made that big save with the paddle. Like,
the incredible goal review, the coach's challenge, and the net come off the mooring stuff.
Yeah,
on
then,
that Kunitz
yeah.
goal,
and then the coach's challenge. That was great.
That was great.
All of it.
Yeah,
it was fun. Holtby was dialed in. It's good.
I just think it's super irresponsible for anybody to traffic in the Capitals put a hit out on
you
a player.
You can't let go of that one, can you?
No, my simian brain can't process that. We're all hockey fans. We were all there in the last 15 years. We lived through Bertuzzi Moore. Once you live through something that was an actual case of a team deciding to take out a player and a player going through on that bounty, and then seeing criminal charges and seeing everything else that came from it, we just can't joke about this stuff.
Can't trivialize that.
You can't trivialize it. Like, you can't write that piece or even infer anything about that if you don't have any evidence about it. It's like, this is not child's play. The Bertuzzi Moore thing was like one of the darkest times in the history of the league.
As a journalist, don't you need to emotionally remove yourself from the situation? And if you're writing emotionally, do you not take a step back? Like, that's my question in all of it. Like, I'm reading some of these pieces and I'm shaking my head. I'm like, don't you have a responsibility to make sure you don't write while you're emotional?
But at least Rossi had the stones to go all the way on it instead of just like dipping your toe in the water of asinine conspiracy theories and just asking the question. Maybe he's on steroids. Just asking the question. Maybe they put a hit out on Sidney Crosby. Just asking the question. Like, at least Rossi has some conviction in his insanity.
So conviction is insanity. The whole thing.
I
keep coming back to your question though. Is the win tainted if Washington comes back?
I think it is.
This one.
I say that as a Devils fan.
I don't think it is.
From 1995 to 2000, I had to deal with my cup being half a cup. Penguins fans will never let the Capitals fans forget that Crosby was hurt in the series, and that was the only reason they were able to get one over on them.
Whatever. Injuries are part of the game. They are. Guys, it's a concussion sport. Gals, it's a concussion sport. I'm not trying to trivialize it. I'm just saying that's the reality of this game. I keep coming back to this example. If you told me I could only park my car while driving 30 miles an hour, eventually I'd learn how to park my car at 30 miles an hour, but I'd smash up a lot of cars in the process.
You probably have some wicked donuts, too.
But you want players skate like this, this fast, no interference, no obstruction. That's cool. We love it. Look, it's the fastest game. And oh, it's great. It's awesome. So fantastic. Bodies are going to get smashed.
Yeah.
It's just the reality of it. Can't have both.
Can the Penguins win without Sid?
Totally.
And Letang?
Totally. Here's what Pittsburgh does better than any other team. Blue line holds. If you look at the way, and there's two strategies, there's two things that are going on. I'm convinced that the reason that Anaheim lost those first two games against Edmonton was they conceded their own, the offensive blue line too quickly and let Edmonton break out easily. And so Anaheim forwards had no support from the D because the minute the puck turned over, they were bailing. If you look at what Pittsburgh does, and this is with, you know, like these aren't household names on the blue line, okay? What they'll do is they challenge every zone exit. And even if they're not successful, what they do is they slow down the Washington Capitals breaking out of their zone to the point where the Pittsburgh Penguins forwards have enough time to catch up and not let them gain speed to the neutral zone. They did this last year against the San Jose Sharks. We couldn't figure out how San Jose couldn't get a forecheck. It's because they were slowed down in the neutral zone. This is one of the things that Pittsburgh does better than any other team in the NHL consistently. Mm-hmm. That's what they do, and that's Mike Sullivan.
Let's deal with the other question about this series now. I'm a guy who picked the Capitals to win the Cup. Right. I'm a guy that wants the Capitals to win a Cup because I'm tired of the conversations annually about how they haven't. I'd like Ovechkin to get a ring. That'd be great. Kind of rooting for Pittsburgh now. Can be honest.
That's funny because I talked to someone right before the podcast who said, you know what? I was Team Penguin before this, but then I read all the takes and now I'm Team Capitals. That's so hilarious.
They're up in the series, but they're the underdog now. Like, if Sid can't go, and let's keep this in mind, like, we all thought he was going to be out for months earlier this season when we got the puck off. What was it, a puck off the head or was it a stick off the head? I forget, in practice. Like, he had a concussion then, and we were all like, oh, God. But he wasn't out for very long, if memory serves. Am I misremembering this? Was it last year? I forget when it was. But it was a situation we were all like on pins and needles because Sid got kabonged, and it wound up being nothing. So, I don't know. There's no telling what the timetable for return is. But let's say he's out for the rest of the series. This team winning without Sid, based on what Sid did in the first two games of the series.
That'd be
winning
awesome.
Winning without Letang, with Fleury in net instead of Murray. Like, all of it.
See, like, here's why I
that's,
want...
That's an underdog story.
Here's why I want Pittsburgh to win. Because of Marc-Andre Fleury. Who was traded how many different times this year to either Carolina or Dallas or Calgary or Winnipeg? I want this team to win for Marc-Andre Fleury. I love this guy. Like, he's one of the players in that list of, you know, don't cheer for teams, cheer for players. In that list for me is Marc-Andre Fleury.
I'm torn between wanting the Capitals to win finally to get the monkey off their backs and the admitted dark pit of a soul that I have that's always curious to see if this franchise can find new depths of despair. They've found some amazing depths of despair in the playoffs. The Montreal series.
2-0-10.
The way the game six went last year against the Penguins. Like, they found some really inventive ways to disappoint everybody and crush their own souls. Knocking Sidney Crosby out of a series with the Penguins on a controversial play and then being unable to beat the Penguins despite that, I mean, that's like 25th level of hell despair right there.
You see, if that happens, though, if Pittsburgh ends up winning this thing, it's going to be because of, well, we all think Malkin and we all think Fleury.
Right.
But there's going to be someone else that fills that Crosby vacuum. Who's not Crosby, but someone, whether it's Phil Kessel.
It won't be Connor Sheary, too, because they're missing
Gensel,
him now, too.
He's got the Conky, too. I know.
Yeah.
It's
oh,
nuts.
My God. Yeah.
They are the underdog now. They're up 2-1, and they're the underdog. Mm-hmm. They've played great, and they're the underdog. But that system is so good. It's tough to break the puck out against Pittsburgh. It really is.
And then Pittsburgh advances, they play Ottawa, and then Ottawa wins in overtime of Game 7 when the puck goes off of Mathot's glove.
Oh! Wow. That's pretty good.
I'll tell you, the NHL should just let me script all this. I got a lot of stories. Got a lot of storylines.
While wearing Ryan O'Reilly's jockstrap.
That's right.
Pulls out the cup to reveal ROR. Ha ha.
I'll say this, though, on the superstar tip, like, it is refreshing to see Sid get a call, to be honest with you. Like, he doesn't get a lot of calls, to be quite candid. He doesn't get a lot of calls on the ice. and he doesn't get any calls from the Department of Player Safety through the years.
Which, can we just stop having the thing about how the league protects Sidney Crosby?
They don't.
If anything, they don't.
They don't.
It's the opposite of football with the quarterbacks. Which, I keep saying, is fine. Like, do you want to put no-hit jerseys on certain players? Like, oh, the league needs to do more to protect their superstars. No, not allowed to be hit? I don't know.
As I said before, I wish there was footage of Nick Backstrom's Reg Dunlop speech in the Capitals locker room. Let them know you're there, boys.
Or apparently, Barry Trotz's Joe McGrath.
Yeah, right?
I guess it would be a Reg Dunlop, though. You can't put a bounty on a man's head. I just did.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, Backstrom putting the bounty.
There was a sort of unsolved mystery as dots to connect there. None of the Capitals players would say what was said in the meeting, and then Barry Trotz said, we have to go places that only the Penguins have gone before. Put them together, and what do you got? You got a hit on Sidney Crosby.
Clearly. What else going on? Are we done with that?
We get to Elliot Friedman, who's going to join us, let's talk about the real big story in hockey, which is the Devils getting the top pick in the draft. Now, Merrick.
That's good.
Who fits better with Taylor Hall? Is it Nico or is it Nolan?
Okay, here's what I was told. First of all, Greg, congratulations.
Thank you. I had a friend of mine DM me the other day after the Devils won the lottery just to congratulate me and say how happy I must be. And I told him the truth, which is that it does feel like I hit the lottery, but it's the $8 million Powerball instead of the $500 million one.
Listen, the top two kids are going to play in the NHL next year.
Oh, that's reassuring.
Both of them will play in the NHL. Will they be Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid?
No,
they won't.
Ryan Lambert said that Nolan Patrick could be Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Is that accurate? Is that level of prospect?
He compares himself to Anze Kopitar. I kind of look at him as Jonathan Toews light. Here's the thing about Nolan Patrick. Okay. Is Nolan Patrick the fastest skater out there? Nope. Does he have the hardest shot out there? Nope. Does he have, you know, the elite level vision of a Wayne Gretzky? Nope. But Nolan Patrick does everything really well. Mm-hmm. He's one of those players you look at and go, yep, great play. Yep, great play. Yep. Great play. Yep, that's the right play. Yep, that's a smart play. Put him out there killing a 5-on-3. Put him out there. Like, every single situation, you can put Nolan Patrick in as a head coach and be really comfortable. But not one thing blows you away.
Are you trying to say that there's a chance that Nolan Patrick may be one of the top 100 players in NHL history the next time they do the Centennial List?
Malkin's got a shot at getting in there now that Crosby's out of the way. Maybe it was a hit put on by Malkin.
So you're saying that Nolan Patrick should be the choice. What about Nico? Do we want him?
Nico, okay, so here's why I describe him. Just Jonathan Toews light versus Pavel Datsyuk light.
Oh.
See, he shares a highly skilled two-way center, but he has that dynamic quality that Nolan Patrick doesn't have. He can, at various moments, he can bring you out of your seat. He has that in his game. Now, he's a left-hand shot. Nolan Patrick is a right-hand shot. I was told that there are many within the Devils organization that are leaning Heischer, but I don't know what Paul Castron thinks. He is their main scout. He went to St. Lawrence with Ray Shiro, longtime buddies. Does he default more to a North American player versus a European one? That ultimately... We had Ray Shiro on Hockey Central yesterday, and I asked him, I said, you know, every time I talk to a scout these days, because one of my questions whenever I talk to scouts happens all the time, I said, you know, who was there? And, you know, for the last couple of months, everyone said, Shiro's here. But he's been on the road a lot, seeing a lot of these guys. It'll probably come down to a conversation between him and Paul Castron, because there's not much of a difference between Nolan Patrick and Nico Heischer. You're getting a guy that's going to play in the middle as early as next season.
But it sounds like the difference is that one is a good Canadian boy and one is an enigma waiting to happen.
Oh, from Switzerland nonetheless. Let's get to Elliot. Elliot is standing by. Free HRA today, bud. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, hey. Gentlemen. What are we going to talk about?
I don't know. You want to talk about the Preds and the Blues? We can go there. We can talk about Anaheim getting back into it. Or we can talk about Matt Niskanen, Sidney Crosby, and Alex Ovechkin.
I want to ask Elliot right off the top the question we've been debating here on the show today.
Yep.
Elliot, if the Capitals beat the Penguins in this series now, do you think it's a tainted victory?
No, I don't. I think that injuries, unfortunately, are part of the game. And, you know, you win. You know, who's to say that, you know, Washington couldn't have had a significant injury at some point? I don't buy that. Injuries are, unfortunately, a part of the game. And I'll tell you this, I still think watching the way that game finished last night that this Pittsburgh team is still good enough to beat Washington even without Sidney Crosby.
If that happens, we were just talking about this a second ago, one of the things that I marvel at with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I was trying to sell Doug on it last night and he wasn't buying, but I talked to one of the Penguins defensemen who sort of broke it down for me yesterday, who said, because I was saying, you know, you guys don't give up the blue line at all. Like, your blue line holds, he said, it's twofold. He said, one, you know, yeah, if we hold the blue line, then the three forwards don't feel like they're out there on an island and we can be part of it. I mean, Anaheim gave up the blue line those first two games easy. When the puck transitioned, they were gone.
Yeah.
And he said to me as well, he said, listen, it's twofold. It's not just that, but what we want to try to do is slow down the other team on their exit to give our forwards, who are generally pretty fast, a chance to get back so Washington or whomever they're playing doesn't have a chance to pick up speed in the neutral zone. That is so frustrating to play against, Friedge.
Well, and I think the Penguins, they don't get enough credit for how smart a team they are.
Yep.
You know, we sit there and we wonder, how can they be where they are, steamrolling Columbus in five, and now being up 2-1 on Washington, you know, without Chris Letang. And it's because I think they understand their weaknesses, do the most they can to figure out how to eliminate them, and really play to their strengths. You know, they've been very opportunistic. They take advantage of their opportunities. Every time they've had to counterpunch in this series, they seem to have scored. But I just think the Penguins are a really smart team. They understand who they are. They understand what they can do. And they basically say, okay, we might give up some opportunities, but we'll take our chances because when we get them, we think we're going to convert them. And if you look at the numbers, and I've been kind of looking at this morning, if you look at the way they're shooting, it's hard to have a playoff, an entire playoff, the way they're shooting. But are you going to bet against a team with that kind of talent that they can't do it?
Yeah, exactly. And also, Braden Holtby wasn't pulled in Game 3, which means he has no way of winning Game 4.
Well, that's right. And you know what? Like, I showed it last night, but there's a theory going around, and one executive on another team called me about it the other day, and I looked at it, and then after we showed it, another guy called me today to say that his team was kind of wondering the same thing. Kelly Rudy said it when I showed him the viz. Every goalie has a hitch. And it looks like Braden Holtby's got one on his left hand. He kind of pulls it in a little bit on his glove when he's about to make. So instead of just making a move to where he wants to go, he kind of pulls it in and then goes to where he wants to go. And if you look at some of the goals to that glove side in this series that Holtby's given up, and again it happened on Malkin's last night, which was a hell of a shot.
Oh, God,
yeah. He pulls the glove into him before he sends it where it wants to go. And I think, you know, it's hard to do it because you don't always have time to shoot. But when they have time to shoot, go look at those glove side goals. There's something there.
You know, and there was something on the Gensel play as well. Paul Campbell, who writes for InGoal, had a really nice, quick little gif on this on the same night. It's almost as if he shuffles over to play on the 2-on-1 goal, the Jake Gensel goal. He shuffles over to play the pass and leaves that entire side open. I was talking to Millard about this, who plays then. He said, that's an indication of a goaltender that's not sure of himself. He's cheating to one side.
What does Millard know about goaltending?
He plays at a pretty high level. Well, no, what am I going to say? I was just on the air with him.
But Merrick, to your point, though, I mean, one of the things that Holtby talked about last night was having long, intense conversations with his sports psychologist in Edmonton with regard to that very thing. So, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think this entire Capitals team had it in their was two in their heads in Game 2.
No question about it. And, you know, the one thing about them is I remember when they went out and they got Shattenkirk, Pittsburgh came through Toronto after. And I just had a chance to talk to a couple of the players, and they were like, you know, we think we can beat Washington. When your history is that, and they've beaten them twice in the Ovechkin-Crosby era, and they're up now 2-1 in the third meeting. I just think those Pittsburgh guys, they think they're in Washington's heads. They really do. They're very confident that they can beat them, and no matter what the situation was, and this was a time when Letang also wasn't playing, I almost like insulted one of them. I said, even without Letang, and they said, you know, we think we're going to be okay against them. We think we have a mental edge, and they're playing like it. And, you know, they did it again at the end of the last game. We went to the last TV timeout with about 5.5 minutes to go. Shots were 11-1 Washington in that third period, and the Penguins got 5 shots of their own, scored twice, and sent it to overtime. And you could see, you know, I was actually pleasantly surprised by the way Washington came out in the OT. I think whoever got them going in that intermission did a great job because they had every excuse to fold.
Absolutely.
But I do see it. The Penguins think that no matter how good Washington's roster is, they're better and they can beat them.
You care to wade into the Niskanen situation?
Sure. You know, I think, and I kind of believe this, I think the Penguins were angrier about Ovechkin than they were about Niskanen. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. Like, I don't, like, the problem is we all watch this stuff in slow motion, right?
Yep.
And I don't think Niskanen had a chance to really get out of the way. If you look at it, Ovechkin does the back check. He slashes Crosby. Their skates get tied up, and he hits him in the head with the stick. And I think that's why the Penguins were mad, because if you go back through the first round, there were a lot of unintentional stick penalties. Like, the league made it very clear in the first round with a lot of, you know, Anaheim had a couple against Calgary. If you didn't control your stick, you were getting a penalty. So I think what happened is, you know, Ovechkin is charging back. He sees Crosby alone. They're already in trouble in the series. He's making a desperate play. I don't think there was any intent to injure, but I think there was intent to prevent him from getting a scoring chance. So he slashes him. Their skates collide. He hits him in the stick, and Crosby is wobbly before he even gets to Niskanen. So Crosby is wobbly, and I don't think Niskanen had any time to avoid him. And he got him. And, you know, the other thing I'm wondering about all this is, like, you know, where, unfortunately, the Sid news, and you hope he's okay, because the game, first of all, nobody needs to have as many concussions as he's had, and the game is a better place with him playing, no matter what team you root for. You know, I wonder, where did the injury actually take place? And I do think the Penguins are probably, and apparently one of the players kind of hinted it last night, that they were more angry about the Ovechkin play than they were about the Niskanen play.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That should have been a penalty without question. While we have you, we should ask you about league things. For example, a situation I'm kind of fascinated by, that Flames deal. Why all this consternation with Treliving before he resigns? Was he asking for too much dough?
I don't even think they talked contract until last week.
Why?
What were they waiting for?
Well, I think this, that they gave Bob Hartley an extension, and he got fired. So this year, I think Bob Hartley made $2.2 million, and he wasn't coaching. And, you know, if you look at Murray Edwards, who's the owner of the Flames, very wealthy man, but the oil market in Calgary has taken a real beating. So I think, you know, he looked at it and said, I'm paying this guy $2.2 million not to coach, so I'm, in theory, I'm never extending anybody ever again. You're going right to the end of your contract, and then if you do a good job, we'll extend you. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people who would like to run their businesses like that in the NHL. But it's weird, and all of a sudden you're sitting here and other teams are looking at you and going, what's going on here? And, you know, I think there was a danger that they came to losing him, that I think there were other teams that would have jumped in if he was available, and they probably let it wait a lot longer than they wanted to, and I have no doubt that there were times last week where it was tense and it looked like it wasn't going to work. And they finally, from what it sounds like, they sat down Monday and hammered it out. But this is what Calgary is going to try to do. This is what they say their business model is going to be from here on in. I just don't know if you're going to be able to do that, because someone told me they had 52 guys in hockey ops whose contracts were up this year.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can run a business like that.
See, no. I don't mind that philosophy for players in some regard, but for GMs, it's unique. And I'll give you an example, and this is why it sort of it doesn't sit well with me, Elliot. When Teddy Purcell came out of NCAA and he was a free agent, Toronto certainly wanted him. Los Angeles ended up getting him. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I was told why Teddy Purcell didn't sign with Toronto at that time was there was a feeling that John Ferguson, even though he was the general manager, wouldn't be there for very long. And you don't want to come in as someone's guy who's about to be fired, or there's not, you know, there's not a solid base for that general manager. That's why I think it's challenging from an organization's point of view not to have your general manager in a situation where he's in a lame duck year.
You know, I think that's very fair, Jeff. And I think the second part of that I would say is that you create a situation where it's fine. Like, I know a guy who works in an agency for Major League Baseball. Okay, he's player agents. And we ran into each other a couple weeks ago, and we're just chatting. And, you know, I was asking him about, like, Bautista and Encarnacion, all the older players who didn't get contracts that they wanted this time around. And he said the cause of that will be that younger players now will demand to make even more money because they see that they will have one big contract, maybe two, and then after that, with all the people who are analytics in Major League Baseball offices deciding that you don't spend on older players, they say we have to get our money now because we won't get it later. And I look at that, I look at a similar cost. People who work for Calgary are going to say, I better go now because I don't know, because I can't necessarily depend on getting my extension if I get even hotter. And so I think I'm curious to see if that affects Calgary's ability to hire people because they'll say that, you know what, you're going to take me right down to the wire at the end of my next contract, so I got to protect myself.
Speaking of figuring out if you want to work for somebody, you've also been keeping tabs on the Buffalo Sabres general manager search.
Yes.
To me, Elliot, I think this is a spot for Jason Botterill. I was given some pause by seeing Conroy made available, although I thought that was sort of
he interviewed yesterday, but I think they've had permission on Conroy for about a week.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I figured Treliving was going to be all right. Because why would you give the alleged successor for Treliving an opportunity to interview elsewhere? I feel like this is Botterill's job. I feel like Pegula casts a craven eye towards the Penguins, and when he talks about discipline and organizational communication and everything else, he's talking about Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope it is. I'm a big fan of Botterill, but what do you think about it? How do you handicap this?
Well, I think right now that I would say that Botterill sounds like he's the leader. I think with some degree of Fenton, Fitzgerald, and Fuda around him. But I do think, like, Buffalo has a very strong hockey alumni and a lot of people who've either been involved with the team or the sport who stay in the area. And I understand there's a big push for Botterill there. Some of them know him. I think they've seen what he's helped do in Pittsburgh. I think there's a big push. You know, the thing that makes me most so, I would say that he's likely he would be my favorite too, Greg. I would say right now. I think that, however, I'm curious about this because one of the things that Terry Pegula talked about was experience.
Yeah,
and you know, Fenton's been with Nashville for 15 years, so at least and he's performed a pretty big role there, but he's never been the guy, and Botterill has been a big role in Pittsburgh, has never been the guy. I wonder, guys, if they're looking at this and saying, we have to get our GM in place because this is a huge draft for us, but I wonder if there's a second hire coming here. Somebody maybe not, I don't know if over top is the right word, but I really, when all is said and done, guys, I'm wondering about the structure of this Buffalo organization. It says to me that there's somebody else coming.
But isn't that backwards, though? Like, wouldn't you hire the president of hockey ops before you hire the GM?
Well, maybe it's just a president of business operations or something like that. But, you know, the whole, and I do know the NHL's been on them for experience. You know, Pat LaFontaine and Tim Murray, this was their both their first jobs. LaFontaine had been briefly with the Islanders, but it was a short tenure, and it was Tim Murray's first GMing job. I know the league has been on them about experience. And I'm actually surprised we haven't heard names like Don Maloney, Dean Lombardi, Brian Burke, Mike Gillis, guys who've kind of done this before. So I wonder, when all is said and done a few months from now, what is this going to look like?
You mentioned a big upcoming draft, and you were just there for the lottery on Saturday. This is my last one for you, Elliot. When I look at all the teams, I see that Dallas is in a really good spot. And if I'm Dallas, I'm picking up the phone and I'm calling the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres need help on the blue line. Miro Heiskanen, depending on who you talk to, is your number one defensive prospect. He's not going to fall out of the top five. He won't be available to you at eight.
Yep.
I'm calling Dallas, and here's why. Dallas is in a good spot for me because they can do a number of things. They can execute the pick. They can trade back for a goaltender. They can trade back and get assets and still get the player they want. You could get that at eight and even Owen Tippett. Or they could trade back for picks next season in a really deep draft. If I'm Buffalo, I want my GM in place talking to Dallas ASAP for that third overall pick.
Well, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think there's a couple of things there. Number one, first of all, Jim Neal, who runs Dallas, is a scout.
Yep.
So if he sees next year's draft as a better one, then I can see him doing that. I think, though, guys, one thing that's been proven in this league is that it's really hard to decide who's going to be your best and worst teams. Like, you know, like every year there's a switch, right?
Yep.
So you're gambling. The second thing is Dallas needs defensemen. And, you know, I agree with you on however he pronounces his name, Heiskanen or Heiskanen. The words out of the under-18s was that his stock really rose.
Yep.
And I think there's going to be a lot of teams reaching out to Dallas around about that pick. I wouldn't be surprised if Detroit does. I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa Bay does. I think he's going to have a lot of options there. But when we look at Dallas, I mean, obviously there's the goaltending issue, but also, too, you know, they've played the last couple of years with eight defensemen, and they haven't found a group they're comfortable with. So if I'm Dallas, what do I do, Jeff? I might just keep the pick if the kid's going to be that good.
If he is, but it's not as if they don't have a lot of young defensemen already. I mean, they're hoping that Elias Honka is still that guy as well. Now, I know you can't force it and make him, you know, turn him into something that he might not be.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that they've gone out of their way to address is the blue line. Like, at a certain point, you know, you need to say to yourself, you know, much like Detroit has come to the conclusion, Nashville lately with Dante Fabro last year, you know, we need to address our blue line here. Chicago's running into that right now, where they have, you know, they're bereft of prospects on the blue line. They'll look to shore up their decor come this draft. And I think you know, ditto if you're the Buffalo Sabres, because you're looking at a disaster on your back end that's probably cost the general manager his job.
Well, I hope you're right that it leads to trades, because I want trades. The draft is always more exciting about trades.
Yeah.
Now, you guys haven't asked me about Rossi yet. I thought that was coming up for sure.
Oh, you want to do Rossi and cutting a promo on Barry Trotz?
Well, you know, this is the one thing I wanted to say, that when ESPN made its cuts last week, what did they do? They fired all the reporters and they kept all the screamers. And I was like, uh-oh. And, you know, like, I'm not a screamer most of the time. Nick can get under my skin periodically, but I'm not generally not a screamer. I try to be more of a reporter. You know, I look at this almost as part of that this is where we're going. And, you know, look, yeah, to me, when I saw it last night, I was like, you know, I was, first of all, you know, Rob wrote a really interesting piece when Scott was let go about how Scott really helped him get through some tough times.
Yeah.
So I was actually really worried for Rob that maybe he was in a bad place, and he's getting enough of a beating, and I don't want to pile on. But the thing that concerns me the most about it is that, you know, ESPN, which is by far the most powerful sports entity around, sent a message last week that yelling and hot takery was more important than the honest reporting. And I'm just worried that this is where we're going, and where that has sent us is into, if we're going to survive, we have to do that. And, you know, I think Rob has had a great career. He's done a lot of really good things. We've all done things that we regret, things that we wish we could do over. But I just hope that that's not what people feel is where they have to go to survive now.
Okay, let me ask.
Nobody benefits from that.
Let me ask you this one, and this is pulling the pin on a grenade, and I understand that. Greg, weigh in on this one as well. Is that more part of the American sports experience than the Canadian one, which is a little more subdued and relies more on information versus hot takes?
I think there's something to that, but I do think that in Canada we are moving in that direction too. Not at the same level, but it's all about surviving in the post-apocalyptic print world, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to head in that direction too.
I think there's a couple things I want to say. The first thing is that you're right in the sense that I think if companies aren't going to pay for reporting, where does that reporting come from?
Yep.
And that's a problem because you need to have that balance. You need to have mm-hmm. that balance of hot takery and news. And if it's simply just, well, we're relying on the AP and the teams for all the news and then everybody else is hot taking, it's all out of balance. I will say that I've always argued that the hockey media, and I've argued this as a blogger, the hockey media is a big tent and there is room for Elliot Friedman and there is room for Alex Pruitt, but there's also room for Rob Rossi and Larry Brooks. You know,
I agree with that 100%.
Right.
Honestly, whenever somebody tells me that Don Cherry shouldn't be on TV, my response is change the channel. Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, I don't like where the world is going right now in the sense that we're almost destroying people now for having different opinions.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that goes for people that maybe like listen, I am very happy that some conservative voices have been silenced because I think they are destructive conservative voices, but I also understand the inherent danger in that too.
For example, PK Subban right now. We had and it's not PK's fault, but anything you say about him that's not 100% pro, I'm not even talking about Mike. We had a debate last week.
Oh, Milbury, yeah.
Where Kelly said that he thinks that maybe PK is a 3-4 defenseman. Nick said 1-2. And I said, you know, I don't think Montreal wins the series even with PK Subban. And I wish people would move on. It's all over. The trade happened. And you know what? It worked out great for him. And we should be happy for him. And you should have seen what I was getting in my mentions. Like, you know, people were calling me a Klansman. And
yeah.
I think that I just look at it now and I say, you know what, it's all the danger with hot takery is that nobody wants to hear an opinion that isn't theirs. If it's not your opinion, it's wrong. And it blows up now. And I heard Rossi's interview today on the TSN station, and you know, I could just see it. Like, you're sitting there and you're in a smoldering cauldron. And I just don't – I worry about what that's going to do to the business, and I worry about what that's going to do to the people in it, because I have no problem with the Larry Brooks and of the world who throw firebombs here and there, but I worry about people's ability to handle it, number one, and I worry about that's what people are going to want all the time, and it's going to take good reporters and it's going to destroy them.
I think one of the things to consider as well – I've maintained this one for a while, Elliot. I'm really glad you brought this up. This always comes up around prediction time, where the real answer is always, I don't know.
Except for when you pick the Predators over the Blackhawks.
Well, you know, I'd pat myself on the back. But the real answer is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you say, I don't know enough times, you'll get fired. If you yell and scream and just say something,
mm-hmm.
and make it loud, you will not get fired ever.
I'll say that the two things. First of all, I think I agree with you on the racial stuff with Milbury. And the PK thing can be kind of explosive.
And it's not even his fault.
No, I agree.
It has nothing to do with him.
I would also say, though, that he has been extraordinarily lazy over the years in his hot takery. You know, the Thelma and Louise thing about the Sedins.
I don't want to even bring Mike into it. I just want to talk about our discussion last week.
Ovechkin should call Crosby daddy, like all this other stuff. But the thing I want to say is that, and this was the lesson from last night, the vast majority of people dismiss the Rossi column as nonsense and as speculative and as atrocious, damaging, irresponsible. And you know who that hurts? That hurts Upgroove or whatever the hell site it is that he works for. Because I think there needs to be a certain amount of responsibility and a certain amount of trust that the marketplace will decide. That a take like that, which basically says that the Capitals decided behind closed doors to Bertuzzi more Sidney Crosby, is not going to be acceptable. And we're not going to search out that reporting anymore. I think we have to trust that there is going to be a reckoning from the marketplace that we want a hot take, but we kind of want it based in reality and not this thing that was there last night. That thing was rejected last night. It was ridiculed.
You know, Greg, I hope you're right. I suspect, though, we're going in that direction. Because what did it do? It got clicks.
But
it got attention.
It got clicks. But it won't have clicks in perpetuity. That's the problem. Is that it's not a sustainable model to throw bombs like that and just invent stuff because no one will ever take it seriously.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
At least in print, maybe you get away with it more on television. I don't know. That's why Bayless and Cowherd linger.
Yeah. That was the first thing that popped out of my head was that. After what ESPN did, this is where we're going. And the people take their cues from ESPN because they're such a powerhouse.
Well, as Merrick said, blame the Americans.
Blame Canada. That was nominated for an Academy Award. So you know what? I guess you have to do that too.
Full disclosure, I texted back and forth with Rossi today. And he just to make sure that, you know, he wasn't going to stab me in the stomach after writing a takedown piece of his piece this morning. And he brought up something that I think is salient. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn in saying this. A lot of people saw that piece last night and were wondering what the hell was going on with Rob. But that was just an amplified version of the thing he's written since I've known him. And it's been on 10 years now. And he's written that same thing, that same tone about the Penguins. And he's written about other teams. And I'll say this about Rossi, like, it was a bit over the top last night, and he went places that I don't think he should have gone, but as far as that thing that he did, that's the thing he does.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm not interested in piling on the guy. He had a tough enough day as it was. I will disagree with that, and because I've watched Rob's work for a long time, and I think he's a really good reporter who's gotten in trouble in Pittsburgh because he has not been afraid to go against the company line and not been afraid to say things that people didn't like to hear, which is what I respect about his work. I'm sorry, Greg, but that was an outlier. It's not the same.
Well, you know what, Elliot? We have to wrap up because I've got hot takes to do on Primetime Sports in about 1 hour. So tune in for my hot takes on Crosby, Niskanen, Freege.
I look forward to listening to it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Elliot.
Take care, Elliot.
Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet as well.
Dare I say his appearance was agenda-driven. He wanted to talk about the Rossi thing.
Brought it up.
I know.
I'm glad that he did because I didn't expect it to... I didn't expect it to have an ESPN slant to it, but he does bring up a good point. And listen, Elliot's always, certainly in Canada, has always been at the vanguard of protecting sports journalism. That's always been Elliot's.
I respect
him for. But the thing is, at the end of all of it, I think he can only go too far because, and I think you touched on this point as well, Greg. At a certain, someone has to do the anthropology. Look, someone doing the anthropology, there can be no hot takes because then you're just existing in an echo chamber.
That's the thing. And you know, the reporting aspect of it has been in a weird place for more than a few years. All these teams hiring their own people to do their own reporting. It's basically state-run media.
Yeah.
The NHL hiring every, you know, prominent newspaper and in Nick Kostanicki's case, Yahoo writer that loses their gig. They all work for them to, now. That's, you know, in a certain way, state-run media. So it is a weird place to be in. But I'll say this, like, I ain't trying to toot my own horn here. But I've been blessed to be in this hockey writing business for now. Well, God, if you want to just do Yahoo, it's been, you know, close to 10 years now. If you want to go beyond that, it's been more like 15 or 16. And, you know, I know that I've written things that have been inflammatory, but at the end of the day, I think I do things. I think my hot takes are based in a place where you could argue the facts with me. And it's not me saying that the Capitals have schemed to injure Sidney Crosby in a darkened locker room. And I don't think it's any coincidence that, you know, the blog has thrived for a decade now almost because of that. And sometimes Lambert will write things that, you know, will infuriate me because I don't think it's necessarily in that same regard. Mm-hmm. But he also is a guy that can pull it off, write the hot take piece while also basing it in fact. So what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, there's a pretty damn big audience for it. You know, maybe you have to... Yeah, maybe occasionally it goes over the edge and you write things that aren't as journalistically responsible as they should be. But for the most part, the stuff that you find on Puck Daddy is a hot take that will also have some, you know, interviews on background with people involved in the situations. It'll have some facts. It'll have some stats. And we have a really large readership. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. I don't think people that come back to the blog are looking for Nick Backstrom or the code red on Sidney Crosby.
I'm more interested in information information.
I'm saying
that's based on curiosity as opposed to anger.
I'm saying there's a way to do it both ways. You can mend it. There is a middle ground to be had between straight reporting and hot takery.
We got to punt. I got to go to PTS and Sammy has to go as well.
And I've got to go to Rangers, Ottawa. We haven't even talked about
Pageau.
John Drewson, this MF-er, like nobody's business.
Ooh, Chris Kontos, this MF-er. Here you go.
All right. Well, thanks to Elliot Friedman. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to you, Merrick.
Good intro today. Solid.
Join us next week for another edition of Caps Lunch as we talk more about the Caps.
Caps Pens Lunch.
Caps Pens Lunch.
Metro Lunch. Right here.
And, if you want to catch us, it's at Wyszynski and at Jeff Merrick on the Twitters. And hashtag at MVSW. So we didn't really get to any mailbag stuff. But for God's sakes, we had Elliot Friedman on. Why would we allow anybody but Elliot Friedman to speak when you have Elliot on?
Unless you had a hot take. Which point? It's all yours. The floor is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a sniper rifle in the upper deck. And
okay.
they invited him into the Capitol's room. And they said, you, sir, you have to prevent this. And...
All right.
Come on, let's go.
We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.